Go Loud. Go Loud presents Talking Bollocks, proudly supported by FlyFit. With 20 locations nationwide, there's always a FlyFit gym nearby to help you crush your fitness goals. Visit flyfit.ie.
Episode 183 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud and proudly supported by FlyFit. FlyFit has 20 gym locations all over Ireland, and for €35 per month, you can join today at flyfit.ie. It's me, COB.
It's me, Teddy Flower.
And today we're joined by
Ryan Hennessy from Picture This.
All right, Ryan, that's very official.
Like
title.
That. Yeah. Because, like I said before, you, the people don't know, but you fucked it up before we came
Shut
on,
up,
Calvin,
yeah.
Right?
All this.
I had a joke prepared, your man from Picture This, and I didn't want to say it again.
Don't let people know that I fuck up the intro.
You fucked it, yeah. Ryan, what's the crack? How are you?
I'm very good. How are you, boys?
Now I was saying it a minute ago, and we got all deep, and Ryan said I have a confidence issue. But I love how you dress, bro.
Thank you very much, yeah.
I love them yokes on your feet. Now, what would you call them, though?
They're Doc Martin loafers.
What, yeah. A few quid, I'd say.
They are now, yeah, because they're after getting real popular recently.
I say you got them in London, did you?
I did get... No, actually, I got these in Dublin.
That was some show, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a great show, too. Yeah. But thank you. That's the best compliment
that I can get.
Yeah. For me, like, I'm big into... I don't like the word fashion, but like style, clothes, whatever.
Mm. Would you ever go into that industry?
I think I would. Like, I've done some bits and pieces. Like, I designed this ring, actually, with a Northern Irish brand called Railta. I have a couple for you, actually. I'll give them to you after.
Ah, thanks.
No worries. But yeah, I like that kind of stuff. I wouldn't really be bothered with, like, because people are always like, would you start your own brand or whatever, but I'm not really that into it, you know what I mean? I just like my own personal style, so that's why I designed that, because I just wanted a horseshoe ring, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I designed it for myself. It's just a bit selfish, really.
Yeah. You look like a barber.
I look like a barber?
Yeah.
That's a good shout. Yeah, they're always... Yeah.
They're all really, you know, next up there, pal, and you're like, all right, mate, well, just give me a skin fade.
Kind of just judge him for the whole episode.
Yeah. Critique him to bits.
We said that with the band, he always said he looks like he smokes roll-ups.
Yeah.
I can imagine what you're thinking about us the But yeah, we're getting tattoos after this as well, Ryan, aren't we?
Yeah.
Myself and yourself. I'm getting the picture of this QR code on my neck after this episode, so I'm looking forward to it.
And the QR code goes straight to the new album.
Yeah. Straight to the new album.
Yeah. You might get the tour dates on his back when you announce the world tour.
Yeah.
World tour, yeah. We go down to your arse cheeks. You when the series on your left cheek.
Have you any zingers?
No, I actually don't. I came in the last time for a zinger, and it was the first time we had one in a long time, and you still haven't brought one in.
No, I'm struggling. Ryan, have you ever got a zinger for us?
Do you know what? I've actually got, it's not really a zinger, but I've got a trivia question for you, right? You've had a guest on this podcast that I'm related to.
Right, hang on.
What?
Wait, give me a minute.
See if you can figure that one out.
Give me a minute.
I know who it is.
No, do you?
No.
Coolio. No. right, give me a minute. Who is from?
Kildare.
The guest is not from Kildare.
Do you want me to answer that? So give you the hint?
Yeah.
The guest is from Clare.
They are from Clare, right. That's at an Ireland one
then. That narrows it way down, doesn't it?
Is this disrespectful in Ireland to not know the Kildare person? Because guaranteed that was the only Kildare person we had on.
Yeah, that's true actually. Yeah.
This disrespect, just cut all the pause and pretend we got it.
Oh, fuck. I'm completely blank. I couldn't even tell you who last week's guest was.
I can't believe we had some related.
It's a tough one now. It is a tough one.
And how come they didn't drop that? Like, boys like they'll be dropping the all over the studio.
Yeah, half my family does, yeah. Around, yeah.
Have you any idea?
No, I'm struggling.
Right, we're going to give each other 5 more seconds.
This is blatant poxy listening.
3, 2, 1, what else? Who the fuck is related to?
Eric Donovan.
Bastard, yeah.
Yeah.
Bastard.
A Thai county killer.
From a Thai, yeah.
Yeah.
How did that not come to us?
Like, literally, I bet he probably lives 2 doors away from you, for fuck's sake.
We grew up in the same state, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How the fuck did
By the way, Eric is the man.
He is, yeah. He is.
Like, what a bloke.
Unbelievable.
And what a career, what a journey, what a story.
Yeah, unbelievable guy.
You are related, yeah?
We're related, yeah. We grew up in an estate called Clamullion Council Estate in Athy, and I went to school with Eric's sister, and I played football with Eric's brothers and everything growing up, so, like, we know each other donkey's years, like. So it's amazing to see... For me, like, and for anybody from it, you're all so proud when you see someone doing well. So for a few of us to be out, you know, doing, representing the town is amazing. And especially the fact that we're related and we're family as well. It's like, it's cool.
It's class, yeah.
You were saying that Athy is in, like, the top roughest towns in Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe.
So do I, yeah. I really do. I find it really hard. Like, it has a reputation for sure, and it always has. And anytime I always get the jokes, like when I say, oh, I'm from a Thai, you get the kind of look of like, all right,
yeah,
you're from there. But like, I guess it's the same as like you said before as well, Terrence, when you're from somewhere, you don't see it as rough, like you just see that's your home, like, and you're always proud of it. But it definitely does get, it gets a really bad reputation, which is a shame.
It is a shame. That was a good one. He's out there really knocking me with that question. Yeah, I won't be the same now for the rest of the episode. We had Danny O'Donoghue on a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And what we asked him was, would you rather arenas or festivals?
Oh, yeah. Right. That's a good question. I think for me, I prefer arenas than festivals. What did Danny say?
He said festivals because people are not coming to see you, so you have to kind of win them over.
Yeah, that's a good point actually as well, yeah.
And that'd probably be the reason why people wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
People would probably rather their own.
Yeah.
Yeah, he preferred the challenge, that kind of thing.
I do love the challenge as well. It's actually a great shout. I never would have thought of it like that. Because there is no better feeling being in a band than being the front man and having to win a crowd.
Yeah.
Because the feeling when you do it is unbelievable feeling. Because it's, you can walk out in front of an arena of 14,000 of your own fans. And it's not easy. It's never easy. Like, you have to put on the best show you can possibly, but they're there to celebrate you and beat out you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, we played Isle of Wight there 2 weeks ago and we walked out and you could just see that there was the first, say like 5,000 people that were all there and they all knew who we were. But then as the festival, people are coming in and it was the Sunday morning. So I was like, I'm not sure what kind of a crowd we'll get. It's like the last day. But you could just see as it built up and we ended up with, like, I'd say there was like 40,000 people there by the end. You just have to go there and like grab it by the scruff of the neck. So yeah. I totally get why Danny would say that. But for me, it's definitely still arenas. There's just something about the energy of an arena. It's more compact, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that.
You've done the Troy Arena go a few times. I mean, you're probably sick about this, right?
Yeah. Never be sick of it. Unbelievable venue. Do you know, it's actually the best arena in the world because a lot of the other arenas are like, they're built for like hockey and stuff.
Yeah.
So they're real long. But the Troy Arena feels like a theatre. The way it's set up, so it just has the best atmosphere. But yeah, we've done the Tree Rain, I think 11 or 12 times, which is mental. Like,
that's mad.
It's crazy, yeah.
Fucking hell. Who's your favourite band, Ryan?
Oasis.
That was quick.
Oasis, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oasis, we were talking about it before, and like Liam on that festival last week, Liam Gallagher was headlining. And just even like being on the same bill as someone like that, like he's my hero.
Yeah,
growing up, like, so being on the same bill as people like that is just unbelievable. You never get used to it, you know what I mean? Like, I don't anyway. I don't know how other people feel when you get like fame or notoriety or whatever. I never get used to stuff like that, and I never get used to walking on stage, say like you're in the Tree Arena and everybody being there. It's still a shock every time I walk out. Just appreciate it so much, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. I don't think I'll ever get used to it.
You said you had a little fangirl moment with Liam before.
Did you? Yeah. That was Mad Cool Festival last year in Madrid. He was playing and we were about to leave, but I knew we'd be able to catch just about the end of a set. So I made all the boys come around to the back of the stage. So we'd just stand there and see him coming off the stage, like just in the flesh. And just an unbelievable feeling. I did feel like a 16-year-old girl. I was like shaking, you know, pure nervous looking at him. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and you've never met him?
Never met him, no.
Need to try and get that set up because it seems like he's playing here every 3 weeks.
He is, isn't he? Yeah. He's just playing last night, yeah.
Playing Limerick last night. I think did he do two nights down there as well?
Maybe.
Or did he? He done two nights here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, Tree Arena, didn't he? Yeah.
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 And then he was in Limerick last night, so you're probably just missing him.
Yeah.
You need to set that up.
It's happened a few times, yeah. I did bump into him, like I was saying to you before as well, in a fish and chip shop in London one time. He came in and I was sitting with my back to the door and I was sitting, actually, my manager was sitting across from me and there was a framed photo on the wall, right? And this is how much of a Liam Gallagher obsessor I am. I looked into the reflection, it wasn't even a mirror, it was a photo. And I looked into the reflection of that and I said to my manager, is that Liam Gallagher? That's just after walking in. I didn't even turn around. And he was like, how the fuck do you know that? And I was like, is it? And he was like, yeah. And he was standing right there behind me, but I didn't have the balls to go up and say anything to him. I'd be too nervous for something like that.
Do you reckon he knows who you are? He might.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. Because we've played loads of festivals and stuff together and he has a good Irish connection. So I'd say possibly.
Where's his man from?
His man's from Mayo.
Mayo.
Yeah,
Mayo. Yeah.
Go up to him, like, I do a bit of the singing myself.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, all right, whatever, me.
I know. Yeah, because that's what I'd be afraid of. Happening, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Having to introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Would you be normally nervous? Or would it just be with the likes of Liam Gallagher?
The likes of that, yeah.
Up there?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't normally be nervous. I'm quite quiet, like, I'm reserved, like. But I'm not nervous or anxious or anything. I don't think.
I was going to say, it'd be a bit hard to be nervous and anxious with walking out to 20,000 people and 40,000 people.
Yeah, it would.
Like, not only that, they'll be running amok on the stage as well.
I think that's the thing, yeah. Because I get a great feeling off people if somebody sees me on stage first and then they meet me, I always get a sense of like disappointment off them because they think I'm going to be a mad cunt off the stage. Like,
you know, well, in fairness, that was, not that I am disappointed, but I've seen you before live.
Yeah.
And then I was saying, you are very like easygoing.
Yeah.
They're very placid.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on stage, you're bouncing.
Yeah, totally.
Like, yeah, what do you want them in here walking around throwing guitars up?
No, but like, some people come in here and they're bouncing.
Yeah.
And they're like, this fella has ADHD. We don't need to get diagnosed.
Yeah.
We know.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just like, chill out, grand. Look at me.
Yeah.
I have a ring there for you. And all. Yeah. You're like, sound.
Yeah.
But whereas on stage, you're like bleeding Freddie Mercury on stage. You're bouncing around.
Yeah, totally. I don't know what it is. It just happened. Because I don't like it. Because some people say you're two different people. Like, you're one person off stage and you're one person on. And I don't believe in that. I feel like I'm the most myself when I'm on stage.
Yeah, expressing yourself.
Totally. I feel free and I feel so alive and I feel uber confident. Like, it's just the best feeling. Like, we're doing on this tour now, our intro even, we don't walk out to any music. You know the way on a show they have like a big intro track and they build. We walk out no music and I walk out myself first straight to the front of the stage and just get the crowd going instantly. You know what I mean? And it's just, and then I get on the piano and start playing or whatever. But that 20 seconds is just, you have to walk out with your chest out and tell the crowd we're going to have the best night ever.
Yeah.
You don't give them a choice. That's my kind of motto, is nobody in here has the choice only to have the best night you can possibly have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, brilliant.
And that's just an amazing feeling. That's why I say I feel most myself actually in that moment. I don't feel like I'm some alter ego, because that's what a lot of people say. And I get why people say that, but that's not how I feel. Like.
No, I can understand where you're coming from. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you meet certain people, if they have certain mannerisms, you have to have, like, especially when you're doing a lot of media, you have to like kind of put on the front. You don't want to slip up.
Yeah.
You don't want them to think something else.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're on the stage, people are there to see Pitch at this, they're there to see Ryan Hennessy be Ryan Hennessy.
Yeah, exactly.
So if this is you expressing yourself, I'd imagine you're singing the songs that you wrote in a certain state of mind. So this is you now channeling this into the world. Bang.
Yeah.
This is me, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just, it's me in its purest form, I think. You know what I mean? Just there's no bar, because I read a great quote recently that I really believe in, which is, for me personally, is like somebody said, when you first meet me, you actually meet my bodyguard. You're not meeting me. You're meeting a version of me that's very like...
Yeah.
And that is definitely how I am, for sure. And I think it's just like, it's just the way I protect myself. You know what I mean? I don't know why. I don't know where it comes from. But it is that then when you're on stage, that's not there. You're just like balls to the wall and there's no barrier.
Yeah.
Just going for it. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Right, Ryan, what we do with every guest is, do you want to take us back to the start? Where are you from? What was life like growing up for you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Athy, in a council estate called Clamullion, which I hold very, very dear to my heart. It's the football team I grew up playing with as well. My dad still runs the club there and all my best friends still play for the club. And football was my whole life, really, growing up. I'm the youngest of four. Never had any interest in music growing up. It was always just like a background thing. You know the way, as anybody, like everybody likes music, but it was never a hobby. I was just obsessed with playing football. It's all I did growing up. And I used to consider music really like weird and uncool, you know what I mean? In school, if I saw somebody walking around with a guitar, I'd be like,
"Yeah,
look at your man. Like, where is he going with the guitar?"
Yeah.
So it's weird now that it's my life and it is my favourite thing in the world now. But growing up, it was just, football, hanging around in the estate with the boys. And but I suppose at the same time, I started writing poetry at a very young age, which is also for me to be going around saying, look, you're out the guitar and then I'm at home writing poetry. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. At the age of seven. It's a bit fucking weird. I've always had a bit of a duality in my personality, you know what I mean? Like, grew up playing football and being with the boys, but then I loved expressing myself through clothes and through poetry and whatever it may be. And I never felt like, and I always resented being put into a box and being like, this is the type of person you are. I always resented that. I don't know why. And my favorite people are people that you can't put into a box. You can't sum them up in a sentence. You know what I mean? Because everybody's a multifaceted person. You know what I mean? And I enjoy being that. And I always embrace that. And I come from a family that always encouraged me to as well. I feel blessed with the family I grew up with. Like, they just, no matter what I wanted to do, they're like, yeah, you can do that. You can actually do that. And coming from a tie, there wasn't a lot of opportunity and there wasn't a lot of people saying you can do that. There's a lot of people saying you'll never amount to nothing. And especially where I come from, Clamullion, it's very frowned upon, looked down upon estate in the town, you know what I mean? And thankfully, people like myself and like Eric Donovan have come from there and been able to show people that we can actually do whatever we want and we can get to the top of our game as long as we believe in ourselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my background, really.
Did you always dress a bit funky growing up?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
And what was that like? Was like, did anyone ever say, look at this fucking head case? Or?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I got that all the time. It was weird as well, because like in my friend group, when I think back now, it's mental. Because in my friend group, the boys are all like, we'd be going out, say, on a night out, and the boys would be in like whatever, even just going down the town, all the boys would be in tracksuits and whatever. And I'd be wearing a pair of fucking like leather pants and a bandana or something stupid, you know what I mean? But the boys never questioned it. The boys were always just like, that's Ryan.
Mm.
And it was never even talked about. They weren't even like, that's Ryan. It was just, was never talked about. Like, they just kind of accepted that that was something I was into, you know what I mean? But it did, it got me in trouble, like, over the years as well, because people would be on a night out saying, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
And all that. And I used to, I think, annoyed them more that I used to not get offended by that, because I was so comfortable in myself that then the fact that I didn't react used to wind them up even more than they keep poking at you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it did escalate into trouble a few times. But
especially when you come from a place like a toy, it might have that small-minded mentality. Like, I remember we went out years ago in Wexford, and we had skin fades. Three or four of the boys, you walked in and a lot of fellas about like, oh, look at them, One Direction. And I was like,
what's
that? Having like a haircut, like, you know what I mean? And I'm like that. But now you're going to go anywhere in the country, everyone has a skin fade.
Yeah.
And, but it's that kind of, as you said, you don't want to be put in a box. If you step outside the norm, everyone's like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
And all they know is dressing different. No one even knows what you actually like.
Yeah, totally.
And I was asking that because, like, where we're from, I've never, like, nobody in my friend group or nobody that I knew ever stepped out of the comfort zone.
Yeah.
There was always tracksuits, even up to now. Mm. Everyone just wears tracksuits, isn't it? Like, we got back to one person, a guest that we had in the podcast before, Sasso Murray. He's the only one that dresses funky.
Right, yeah.
That I've ever met from the NSC.
And everyone knows who he is because of that.
Yeah. Right,
okay. The people who've never met him know that he dresses outside of the box.
Yeah.
You're going to start dressing like Ryan, you said.
I'm going to come in next week. I am fresh. He's going to bring me out to the gaff, get me a nice pair of flares and a check shirt.
There's a good bit of content on that. Like, just you bringing him out shopping.
Yeah, I'll style you.
Like a montage. You do a montage, like, I'm Too Sexy playing in the background. You sitting there with a newspaper, Terrence walking out of the dressing room, you shaking your head. Until you get to writing and you're like,
you've thought about it.
I'm telling you now, lads, we're on that gold mine now.
Let's do it.
Add in the fact that you're getting matching tattoos after this.
I promise you, I'll get a tattoo with you anyways.
You're a brave man, I tell you that much.
You have to get the same of what he gets, though.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Yeah.
Picture this right across my back.
I'm getting picture this. You can't.
Oh, you know what you'll get.
I'll get the Talking Bollocks logo.
Yeah.
On my forehead.
What was skill like for you, Ryan?
I absolutely hated every second of it, I have to say. But I was never bad in school. Like, I was never really disruptive or anything like that. I just always found it very, I just found it difficult. Like, I just found it, it's like that thing of when I'm talking about being put into a box. I always hated the constraints of school. It always kind of got me back up being told what to do and how to dress, what to wear and everything like that. But my school wasn't bad, in fairness. Like, they were grand. Sport was always kind of the relief for me to be able to go and play soccer or gar or whatever. But I still have nightmares about school, still to this day, of being back in school. And I wake up absolutely sweating.
Had one last night. I swear to God.
Really?
Had one last night. Yeah.
This happened to him. So, like, he's been telling me this for like 3-4 years. How regular nightmares he gets about school.
Really?
I woke up this morning and I remember it's like the nightmare is updating itself to fit the current curriculum. Because, you know, they've changed the scoring system in the leaving cert. And someone was like, we're going in to do like applied English now. What English are you doing? And I was like, it's not ordinary or higher anymore.
Yeah.
And like, even like, that's how unprepared I am going into that. And then I'm waking up in my own fucking house. Like, you know what I mean? I'm waking up in my own house going into a fucking podcast with the fellow off pitch of this. I'm still panicking about the leaving cert. It was in 2012.
Yeah, I'm the very same. That's mad.
Isn't it?
Because I've never met anyone else like that. Because I always have a nightmare that I'm late for maths class. Because I used to feel like such a gobshite in maths. I just felt so stupid. It was so bad for my confidence. I have a confidence issue as well. Like,
as well.
Sound right.
So, I'm only winding you. But yeah, it used to kill me. It used to really kill me. Maths, I just feel so stupid going in there. Like, and that's kind of the big one I have. English was the only thing I was ever good at in school. English and PE. But in fairness, in saying that, I have school to thank for being in music, because I was never interested in it, like I said. And then when I got to sixth year, I got thrown out of my French class for messing. And I had a choice between you can go into music or you could go into woodwork. And I'm terrible at anything like woodwork or techcraft or anything like that. Just can't do it. So I was like, music always seemed like a bit of a DOS class. And there was a lot of girls in the class. So I was like, right, I'll go and do a bit of music for a year. This would be fucking great. And then when I got in there, they were like, you have to do a practical exam. So you have to sing or play an instrument or do some music technology or something. And I was like, well, I can't play an instrument. Mm. I've never sang and I can barely use a computer, so I'm fucked. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I was like, the only thing I can do quickly is I'll just like try and sing. And then I remember going home and going up to my room, and I'd never even sang before. Like, I wouldn't even be the type of person that like sing in the shower or anything like that. And I remember just, I loved Luke Kelly at that time. It's still Luke, one of my heroes. And I remember going, I may just try and sing a song here. And I remember I said, I'm going to go down and sing it for my father and see what he thinks, because he'll give me an honest answer. He'll say, you're shy, or he'll say, you're great. Like, I walked downstairs and I walked past the sitting room door 4 or 5 times because I was too nervous to go in and say, can I sing for you? And then eventually I built up the courage to do it, and I went in and I said to my dad, can I sing a song for you? And he was like, yeah, all right. Like, why do you want to do that? I told him about music in school, and he was just shocked because he was like, right, if you want. And I asked him to close his eyes because I didn't want him to look at me. And I closed my eyes and I sang a song called Come My Little Son that I heard Luke Kelly singing. And I just sang that from start to finish. And I remember being afraid to open my eyes, to be like, I'm just afraid of what he's going to say. Like, and when I opened my eyes, he was just wide-eyed looking back at me. He was just like, what is after happening? He was like, where did that come from? I've never heard you sing in my life. And he was like, you just sang the most beautiful song I've ever heard. And I was just like, all right, maybe I can do this then, judging off that reaction. And then I went into school the next day, and that was the first time I sang ever.
And was there any like musical connections in your family at all? Like, you know, where sometimes you hear like somebody in the family may have played an instrument, or like the nanny or granddad may have been a singer in the pub or something? No, nothing.
Nobody played any instruments, or no singers, nobody in music whatsoever. My family, just a big sports family. Like, that was it. My dad used to write poetry when he was my age as well, and so did his dad, but never like professionally. It was just like a hobby, but they were great. Like, I have some of their stuff at home and it's brilliant. But I don't know where it came out of. I really don't know where it came out of. So I do have school to thank for that, because I never would have done it otherwise, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was surreal, like.
So is that just natural for you then? Like,
I guess it is, yeah.
Yeah. So like, if your dad had that reaction and you were just going down and singing for like the first time,
yeah,
then you can only get better from there. But you naturally had that.
Yeah, I obviously did, yeah, because I had no, like I said, never even sang in the shower or nothing, like no experience with music whatsoever. And then when I went into school the next day, I did the same thing. I made everyone, because I had to sing in front of the teacher and a couple of lads, a lad that was going to play guitar for me, and I made them all close their eyes, did the same thing, sang again, and got the same reaction. And then that just kept happening. Then I just started singing for people and kept getting that reaction. Then I was like, I obviously have something here, because I can tell they're not bullshitting me, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's literally how my career in music started. Then it was from that. Like,
and how old are you there?
18.
18. Yeah, sing for the first time.
Yeah, first time.
Music and skill.
Yeah.
And mother of Jesus, that's the maddest thing I've ever heard.
It's crazy. Do. And you know what? Sometimes people don't believe me. They're like, you must have been singing. You must have known.
No, this is what I'm thinking in my head now. I don't think you're lying, but yeah, I'm saying that's mad that you're that age and you just figured out you have this thing.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
You're here today.
Yeah, it's so strange, because like 2 years after that was the start of Picture Just Like.
Yeah.
Like, it happened literally. I went from never singing in my life to the band starting and going viral with Take My Hand and all that in the beginning. And it was just like an absolute whirlwind. I didn't know what was going on. Like,
I remember that whole Take My Hand thing, like just going viral and then like picture this is a thing now.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone been like, is that the man off the video? Like, that's just there now. Like,
yeah.
And it's just cemented in Irish music legacy. That's it. Do you not remember this?
No.
What was on Facebook probably, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It would have been back in the day.
Yeah.
He's singing the song, Take My Hand.
Mm.
But then like, it blew. It was fucking everywhere. So yeah. I remember being in college and that going around.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And being like obviously it was very good and all, but then bang, on the Tree Arena. And
yeah.
Like, how did you get from here to here? It was overnight nearly.
It literally was, yeah. Because I know a lot of artists that don't like the term like overnight success, because they're like, no, I worked for it. And of course you did, and of course we did, but it really was like instant. It was, because what happened was, the story of Take My Hand was, I started writing, so after all that music stuff in school, I then got a lad to teach me a few chords on guitar, and I was like, I want to start learning how to play an instrument. And he taught me how to play one chord, a G chord, and it's the only chord I could play. And I sat down in my bed and I played the same chord over and over, and I wrote Take My Hand in my bedroom with just that one chord. And then I remember that was kind of the first proper, I was in a kind of a pub band in between that for like a year, where I'd sing a few tunes with like a band. But then I wrote Take My Hand, and I remember when we'd be going out drinking, we'd go to my friend's house and we'd be pre-drinking in his, and they'd always say, bring the guitar and sing a few songs. And then this one night, all the boys went downtown and it was only me and my friend Devin left. And he said, sing me one of your own songs before we head down. And I was like, Take My Hand was the only song I had. So I sang it to him. And it was another one of those situations where I had my eyes closed the whole time. And when I opened them, he'll hate me for saying this, but he had tears in his eyes. Yeah. I had a few cans in him as well. I think that might have been a big part of it, but he had tears in his eyes. He was like, there's no way you wrote that song. You didn't write that song. And I was like, I'm telling you, I had to convince, I was like, Google it. You're not going to find it anywhere. I wrote it in my bedroom last week. Like, And he was like, he just couldn't believe it. And then we went out on the night out, and the next morning I woke up to him baiting down my door. And I looked out the window. I was like, what do you want? I was dying with a hangover. And he was like, get into the car. I have a guitar in the car. I'm going to drive you out to this spot and I tell you, I'm going to record you playing this song and you're posting it on Facebook. So he made me do it. I never would have done it. And then I did that and I went home, posted it, and it went viral straight away just off my own personal Facebook page. And that's how Picture This started then, because Jimmy from the band messaged me that night and was like, can you please come out? I'm after setting up a studio in my house. I'm starting to record music. Can you please come out and record the song? Like, this song is special. And then that was going viral just on my page. And then we recorded the song and released it, and the same thing happened. It went viral. It got played on radio the next morning on Today FM. It was just unbelievable. Just all that just kept happening. And I didn't know what was going on. Like, and I thought that was normal because I didn't know any better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought you just put a song out and it goes on the radio and everyone loves it. So it was kind of a weird entry point. I didn't do, and I think some people probably hold it against me actually. Yeah. I didn't do that slog that a lot of people did. You know?
Yeah.
I mean?
You didn't pay your dues kind of thing.
Yeah. And I used to feel that a little bit, but I did really like I'm saying, I was writing poetry from a young age, and I was living. I was getting all these experiences that I was going to write about, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So that whole first album is about all my teenage years.
Yeah, exactly. So like a song as beautiful as Bleeding Take My Hand, it comes naturally to you. You wrote that.
Yeah.
So, like, if you were able to stumble across a gem like that.
Yeah.
Well, then that is you paying your dues.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know, like, as you said, you think this is just natural that everything you do is a success. But if you have this bleeding diamond there,
yeah,
and you're able to put it down on the paper and get it out there quicker than someone else who has to do like 9 or 10 tries or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. That's the thing that I had to come to terms with. Like, well, it's not my fault. Like, I was nearly blaming myself for writing a good song. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not my fault that I didn't do that, or I wasn't in music for 10 years before that. I just so happened to, it happened for me the way it was supposed to happen for me, and it happens for everyone else the way it's supposed to happen for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Someone could feel like you didn't pay your dues. You wrote the song, you sang the fucking song, the song went out and people enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I know.
I didn't fail 40 times before I did.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Honest to God,
No, like, I don't really understand that.
It's a weird mindset, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a
begrudgery mindset. Like, it is, yeah. Now you have to walk like the rest of us.
Yeah.
Well, I just took off running.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration behind that? Was it about someone in particular? You don't have to name them if it was, but...
It wasn't really about someone in particular. Well, no, it was. It was about someone in particular. I was going to lie, but then I was like, you know what, I won't. Like,
you won't name her.
No, it was about someone in particular, yeah. And it was, when I was growing up, I would be like, and I'm still like that in general, I just like, I fall in love very quickly. I'm a very emotional person, I think.
Mm.
So I fall in love like very deeply, and I fall out with people very deeply, and all, you know what I mean? I'm quite an extreme person like that, I think. And that's what the song really is about. It's that kind of, you know, when you're a teenager and you think you're after meeting the love of your life, you're only 15, like.
Yeah.
And it was about that. It was really kind of a culmination of all of those experiences from the age of like 13 to 18 of falling head over heels in love and being like, this is the woman I'm going to marry, and all that. And just that feeling. I love love, like.
Yeah.
I love, and I love being in love. I love the feeling it gives me. I absolutely love it, like. And that's what that song is about. It's trying to capture the innocence of that kind of teenage love. That's what Take My Hand is, really.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh, it's class. And it's bleeding. It's probably like every bleeding culture.
It is, yeah. I know. It's unbelievable. It became like a... It's like a... In the pubs as well. It's like... Because it's the way it starts off with just the Take My Hand kind of being shouted.
Mm.
You can shout it in any pub and it just becomes... Everyone starts singing it, which is... It's unbelievable. Like, that was amazing for us when the song was first starting, or in the pub in a tie or whatever. And that people always ended the night on that in a tie in the nightclub and all for like 2 years. But yeah, any wedding I go to, my head does be wrecked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it because everyone's butchering it? Tell the truth.
Oh, that song gets butchered.
Yeah.
That song does get butchered. It really does, for whatever reason that particular song does. But look, it's the worst is when you're at a wedding and the wedding band knows that I'm there. You know what I mean? Because then they're kind of winking at you all night and being like, I'm going to wait till you hear this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Fuck,
you won't be expecting this.
Yeah. I fucking wish I didn't hear it then at the end of the night. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's a big compliment. Like, it's unbelievable compliment. It's like, it's part of the fabric of the Irish music industry or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's unbelievable.
Have you stopped writing poetry? Or
No, I still write poetry. Yeah.
Still write poetry.
I brought out a poetry book 2 years ago now. Yeah, 2 years ago. And that was a cool process, because I kind of, when the band started, I did stop though.
Yeah.
The first kind of 5 years, because that's what happened, was that as soon as I started singing, the poetry just turned into songs.
Yeah.
So I just started writing songs.
Yeah. Probably all just writing songs.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was like the first 5 years of the band. But no, I'm working on a second book now at the minute, and I released one they're very different processes for me. So I know, because people ask me that sometimes, do you know when you're writing a song and when you're writing a poem, or is it one thing, or do you ever turn a poem into a song? But I don't. It's all, for whatever reason, totally compartmentalized in my head. I sit down to write a poem, or I sit down to write a song.
So you never different. Like wrote a poem and be like, actually, do you know what, this might be a good channel?
No, I've never done it. I don't know why. I think maybe it's the style of the poetry I write is very different or something. I don't know. It wouldn't feel the same as like writing a song. I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
I love both. I love doing both. Yeah.
See, we had a debut album. So the debut album, when that came out, all the songs that are on that, they're all very like kind of soft, good melody to them, kind of bit, for lack of a better term, bit culty.
Yeah.
But then yeah, the next album that came out, that was a bit more kind of, I don't know what way you describe it. It was a bit different.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was a conscious decision, because I didn't want to be pigeonholed.
Yeah.
Because we could have, the first album was so successful that the obvious thing to do and what everybody wanted us to do was just make the same album again.
Yeah.
Just do something that's just a little bit different and do the same thing again, and you're onto a winner. But that just felt like cheating to me or something. I didn't want to cheat our audience to be like, I'm just repackaging this thing for you because everyone is saying that's what will be successful. So we wanted to be like, it was crucial for us that our second album sounded completely different from our first album. So then, for the rest of our careers, we can make any kind of album we want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was really, it was, when I look back now, it was brave because we were young.
Yeah.
And it was very, like, it was a brave move actually. But I'm so glad that we did it, because we can release any kind of music and it won't be like, that's weird for them to release that kind of song.
Yeah, it's ballsy, like, because if you make 1, 2, 3 albums and they're all quite similar, and then you just change it, it's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yours are going in off the bat.
Yeah.
Different things. So nobody then can really go.
So I remember I heard One Drink on the radio for the first time. And they're like, oh, picture this new tune. I was like, picture this?
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking sound like picture this.
I know, yeah. That was great, because that was the first song off that album, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the first one that everyone heard, and it's one of our most successful songs.
Yeah.
So that was a real nice kind of affirmation of you're doing the right thing. You know what I mean? Because it could have went tits up. Everyone could have been like, we don't want anything to do with that. I remember we did a press conference when we were announcing the Five Nights in the Tree Arena, and we played, so it was like all the media, and then we picked like 20 of our biggest fans, and before the press conference we played One Drink, so they were the first people to hear it. And I always remember my dad was there, and he always says that he was looking around at the fans and they were all just like mouths wide open being like, I can't believe what I'm hearing, like this is crazy that this is the direction they're going in. But that was important for us as well. We've got a great connection with our fans. I know that sounds like a very fucking cheesy industry thing to say, and I'm sure everybody says it, but from the word go, because of the fact that they made us go viral and gave us a job, you know, it gave us a career, gave us a life, we always try and make sure that they're kind of the first ones to hear it. So we wanted them to hear the song first before the rest of the world and all that. But everybody's reaction was like, this is mad that this is a picture of this song, because it was totally different, like. Yeah. But we did get some criticism as well from people, to be like, oh, they got signed to a record label in America and now they're trying to sound American and all this. A lot of bollocks. That was all us, like, we did it.
Yeah.
Everything that comes from Picture This comes from us, and that's it. And that's the way myself and Jimmy, we think about everything, and it all comes from us, whether it's the artwork, what you see on stage, and all of us in the band, that like the current setup we have on stage is where we built a car park on the stage, because the album's called Parked Car Conversations, and that was designed by the four of us in the band and all of that. And anything you see coming from Picture This, you can know that that's coming from us. It's nothing to do with a record label or a management. That's us. We're across absolutely everything. Like, so we were able to stand behind it and be like, you're fucking wrong. Like, that was our decision.
It's just an easy go to for people.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, somebody told us to do that. You know, because they didn't enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah.
The fuck
up, it used to drive me mental, but I'm okay with it now. Like,
Because
you're right. It's just the easy reaction.
It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Say someone else told you to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, all right, sound. Like, what do you want me to do about that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know. Totally. You mentioned fans then. You looked a little bit uneasy to me when you were saying, like, fans and whatever. What was that like for, like, obviously you just shot the fame, like, you're huge now.
Yeah.
What's that like for you? Do you cope with that well?
I think I do. I think it is weird, like, it is weird, especially in Ireland, obviously. Ireland's our biggest market, if you want to call it that. It is weird. But I think for whatever reason, I've always been kind of comfortable with the whole process. I don't know why, because like I said, it came out of nowhere. But for whatever reason, I don't know why, but I always have because people always say to me, does it not wreck your head, like people coming up to you when you're walking down the street every 5 minutes and asking you for a selfie and all that? And I'm like, I totally understand why you would think that, and I don't know how you feel about that, but for me, I'm like, I've never had a bad experience with somebody, which I'm blessed. Nobody's ever come up and gone, you're a fucking wanker, I fucking hate your band. I've never had that. I only get people coming up saying, oh, can I get a photo, which I love the band. So how could you hate that?
Yeah.
Somebody coming up to you telling you the thing that your whole life and the thing that's most precious to you and that you're most proud of people coming up to you constantly saying, I love that. It's like, I'll always appreciate that. Now, at the same time, before I was even in a band, I wanted to walk downtown and not be bothered by anybody. You know what I mean? I like to keep myself to myself in general. Yeah. So I was already a bit like, for fuck's sake. But no, I absolutely appreciate it all. And like I said, I'm lucky. I haven't had any bad experiences.
Would you get stopped walking around town here much?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I didn't today, actually. But I would.
Quickly leave here with 30.
Never. Yeah. Well, how do you feel about that? Like, people coming up to you and stopping you.
I get a bit fucked up about it, but I have like mad imposter syndrome. Like, I break what we do down so much. I'm like, we talk to people.
Yeah. And in fairness, like, you're selling out the Tree Arena for 5 nights in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The contrast is glaring.
Like, there's instruments and singing and stadiums and festivals. And we're like doing the odd show in the National Stadium. We're going around, people ask, I'm like, what do you want the picture?
Yeah, yeah. No, but you're selling yourself short. Like, I know that is imposter syndrome, but what you do is amazing. I could never in a million years do what you do. Mm. Never, ever. It's an amazing thing that you do. And I think I'm not just saying this because I'm here, and like, you know, I've been a fan from the very beginning, actually, listening to the podcast, and I think you're really important people. I think you are, because there's a lot of, especially the way you talk about mental health and wellness and all of that kind of thing. It's important to see it coming from two lads that you can really relate to, because I can really relate to you. You remind me of my friends that I grew up with. And there's a lot of people online that are like doctors, and they're, do you know what I mean, like neurosurgeons talking about the brain and all that kind of thing, and for me, I can't really relate to that. It doesn't give me anything. But when I see the stuff that you do, I'm able to just completely relate to it, and it feels like I know yous, you know what I mean, without actually knowing yous until today. So yeah, I think you're two very important people, and so don't sell yourself short.
On the flip side of that, though, we actually couldn't believe. Remember when we set this up, and you were just like, "I followed them, and he followed me back."
Yeah, like, I heard that. I heard you talking about it on the podcast.
Do I do now? Yeah. I was like, "Do I text?" Yeah. And then he says he's a fan. Bollocks! Yeah. That's a cunt of a thing. But see with the fan thing, I want to go back to that. You would never be just going to gigs, would you? Like, would you go with your mates and just go to a fucking Dermot Kennedy gig?
No. No,
you'd be mobbed.
You'd be mobbed, yeah.
You wouldn't enjoy it.
And you know what the thing is with that is that I'd be, because I've gone to shows before, like smaller shows, and then somebody comes up and asks you for a photo, and then turns into like a meet and greet with like 100 people, and then I don't want that artist to think that I'm there trying to be like, oh, I'm here. Because like I'm saying, I like keep myself to myself and being incognito in those kind of situations. So I always try and just go under the radar as much as I can at shows and stuff like that.
That's where you get the backstage passes running, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what it's for, yeah. That's where it pays off, yeah.
That's where we'd be collared. Someone like you could never do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think, like, I think you'd just be absolutely mobbed.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say so. You know? It's happened a few times at shows and stuff like that, but I'm not a big concert goer anyway. I think it's once you're in the business. Oh, it's only if like I love like a big, big artist that I love. I wouldn't really go to many concerts. And because people always say to you, like when we're at the festivals, do you love going to festivals? I hate going to festivals. Love playing them. Like, so I'm lucky because they're amazing. But I'm just not that. I can't do it. I don't know how people do go to festivals for a weekend and walk around for hours and all that.
I think it's heavy.
Yeah, I couldn't do it, boys.
I fucking love it.
Do you? Yeah. Some people love it. I think that's mad.
But even when I was gaggling, I still wouldn't be into that. Like, just let me go into a pub there.
Yeah, I understand.
Do you know you're talking about his style? Do you know who you remind me of? Have you ever met Cian DeCrow?
Never met him, no.
So I was at EP last year. I ended up blagging my way into like the artist arena.
Oh, right.
And he floated through. And I was like, that fella is fresh out of LA. And I know that for a fact. Don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Fresh out of LA, yeah. And I pulled the person who got me in. I goes, who's that? And she goes, that's Cian DeCrow. Do you not know him? I says, no. She goes, you only came back from California this morning. But he has the exact same style as you. Yeah, you know, it's a real loud style.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, it must be a fucking singer thing.
Yeah.
Must be.
Be able to sing, Terry.
Oh, if I could sing now, you wouldn't get me out of them clothes. What are you going to do? Judge me? I'll just sing. Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
See, earlier on you were saying about, I know you were joking with Terry about a confidence issue.
Yeah.
Do you think you have a confidence issue still?
Sometimes, yeah. I think I'm an up and down kind of person in general. Like, so I do. I struggle with confidence sometimes, and then I'd be uber confident other times. You know what I mean? I don't have imposter syndrome. I can say that because I believe that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, and that for whatever reason I was born to do what I'm doing.
Mm.
So I'm sure that I'm supposed to be where I am, but it's up to me to make sure that I do that service then. And I care about every little detail of it and make sure that it's perfect and that I'm at the top of my game at all times. I care so much about it. But then I do, yeah, I struggle with confidence just in general, the same as anybody does. You know what I mean? I think people look at lead singers in bands and think they're bulletproof, but they're often the most fragile people.
But especially from an outside perspective, you'd see, again, the way you dress, like, it's real out there, it's real eccentric, you see it on the stage. Yeah. So you just naturally think, ah, he's confident.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't realise.
Yeah, and I used to get that even before the band, where people would be like, oh, he's up his own arse, like, he's so stuck up because of the way I dressed. And that paired, I think, I'm my own worst enemy in a way, because I'm quite quiet and reserved, like I'm saying, but I do dress outlandish. So people would be like, oh, I just really want to talk to you, but look at what he's wearing, he's just up his own arse. Mm. So it was kind of a catch-22 for me growing up. I think you get a bit more leeway now being in a band. But yeah, I think I'm up and down as much as anybody. Mm. I write all the time, write songs all the time. It's like a fucking infliction, I always say, because I'm lucky, you know what I mean? Because I know a lot of people who have writer's block and all of that. I haven't experienced that yet, touch what I want. But if I go like a couple of days without writing a song, then in my brain, end of the world, I'm never going to be able to write a song again. That's it. I can't do it anymore. I'm useless. Everybody else is going to move on and forget about me. So that's a constant battle I have. Mm-hmm. And that's tough. That is tough. That's the first thing that springs to my mind when you talk about confidence. And I would have had over the years, like, probably body kind of confidence issues as well, and how I look. I think that's probably why I have a lot of tattoos, and probably why I was dressing outlandish, I think, was because I wasn't confident in myself and how I looked. And I would have wanted to kind of take away from it. You know, when someone looks at me, they're looking at my clothes or looking at my tattoos or whatever. I would have had that over the years. I still do.
Yeah. Are you afraid of slowing down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am. I really am. Like, and I don't want to. And that's a fear. I don't want to do that anytime soon. Because I just love it so much. That's the real reason. You know what I mean? It's probably more that I just love it so much rather than that it's a fear of slowing down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just enjoy every aspect of it.
Do you think it came from a place of, though, like, you got it, I don't want to say you got it easy, but you got here so quickly that you think it could be quickly gone?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah. I do think about that, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I think I don't really struggle with that as much as I did before, because I think actually the whole time during COVID was obviously a terrible time for everybody, but in terms of the upsides, it was a great time for us as a band and a great time for me personally. It allowed me to, my personal life, go to therapy and all that for the first time and figure a lot of shit out that I needed to figure out. But it also meant that we could take a step back for a minute and be like, right, what kind of band do we actually want to be when the world comes back, and what kind of people do we want to be? And we would have just stayed going, and we probably would have burnt out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because of having that innate sense of, I need to fucking hold on to this and I love it. So that kind of 2 years was a really good thing for us. In a way, it was a forced stop because we just wouldn't have stopped, and I'd say we would have burnt out at a certain point.
Yeah. Then 5 nights in the Tray Arena. That wasn't your first time playing the Tray Arena, was it?
No, we played 2 nights before that in 2017.
Yeah. And what was that like, the first time?
Unbelievable. It was crazy. I'll never forget it. Because when the band started out, because I was so green to it, like, I didn't know that you could even put on a show. I didn't know how that worked. I didn't know that we could just get a manager and get an agent and then say, we're going to book this room and you're going to play in it. I literally didn't even know that was possible. So it was like, when we started off, our first ever show was supposed to be in the Grand Social, and it sold out in like 2 minutes or something, and it got moved to the Academy. And so our first ever headline show was to 800 people in the Academy. We were the first band ever to do it. And I remember just being like, this is mental. I remember Jimmy saying to me, we're going to have to do a show at some point, being the Academy. I was like, I'm never going to be able to get up on stage and play these songs in front of people. Like, no way. And he was like, you're fucked, because you have to. We're after getting that popular, like, people are asking for a gig. And I was like, fucking hell. And I remember that being the biggest deal ever, playing the Academy. I was like, if we ever get more than that, that'd be just unbelievable. Exceed all of our expectations, you know what I mean? And then we were in the Olympia after that. But it was November 2017, the first time we played. We played 2 nights in the Tree Rain, and I'll just never forget the feeling of walking up onto the stage and just being totally overwhelmed. Like, the fucking feeling of 14,000 people there screaming, just like, oh my God, I don't know what was going on. I can still, when I think about it now, I can still feel the adrenaline. There's adrenaline pumping through my body right now. I can feel it. You know what I mean? Because I'm back on that stage. It was just, yeah, unbelievable.
I think you heard the two of us like sniggering there when you said the Academy thing, and then be able to do that bigger. It's because you went on to fucking play the Tray Arena about 93.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we'll never be able to do that bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Play the old two there about 100 times.
Yeah, I know.
But 5 nights then, what's the thought process behind 5 nights then?
That was a scary, scary one, because like nobody had ever, people had played 5 nights in the Tree Arena before when it was the point, and people had played 5 nights over a week, you know, with like a night off. But nobody had ever announced, we're going to do 5 nights in a row and we're putting them all on sale at one time. Because usually people will put the first one on sale, let that sell out, you know what I mean? But we went, five nights we're doing it and announced it and it all sold out and I remember just being like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, this is fucking
that's a joke.
Well, I remember coming up to that, you couldn't get tickets to pitch at this for love nor money. Yeah. You couldn't. And then when that was announced, you're like, I might get tickets for this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not even like lovely. I guarantee like you might, you just have a better chance of getting tickets.
Yeah.
And I think it was like the third night, I got my missus tickets for her birthday or Christmas one. I did, I got tickets anyways.
Yeah.
And then I remember it being like, geez, just as well I got them when I did because that's it now.
Yeah.
And she was delighted with it because you couldn't get tickets to it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a joke, that.
Do you know what I mean?
It was then, mental.
And then Lewis Capaldi opened for us as well.
Yeah, Lewis opened for us. Yeah, that was... That's mental on you. Because you never, you try not to think about it too much, you know what I mean? But just even hearing you saying that out loud is crazy. Like,
no, think about it all the time.
Yeah.
Open.
I know, honest to God, yeah. No, it was unbelievable. And that was, it was in March. It was the first night was the night after my 24th birthday. And you're doing five nights in the Tree Arena. I just couldn't believe what was going on. It was such a whirlwind. And you're trying to be as present as you possibly can be, you know what I mean? But when you're doing five nights in a row, it all kind of goes into one blur. And I know everybody, I hear the word grateful so much nowadays, and sometimes I think it can be a bit disingenuous, but I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
So, so grateful for what we've done so far. Just, especially like I'm saying, where I come from and where we come from, to get to do things like that. And Atai was a big part. It felt like for us that Atai was just like our hardcore fan base in the very, very beginning. And they pushed us into the rest of Ireland. We're like, check these boys out. Because everybody was going around saying, these are our boys, like from Atai. And that's kind of how the word spread, I think. You know what I mean? So we've got Deb to thank for that we got to go on and do these incredible things. It's amazing. I'll never forget that. Like,
you sound like a workaholic, man. You just sound like you're constantly on it. Do you?
Yeah.
See, I've heard so many people who are like performers say that like they walk, and then when they stop, they're just sick.
Yeah.
They're just bollocks.
Yeah.
Do you be like
100%,
that?
Yeah. I'm like that right now because we just played our last festival of the summer and we did three weekends in Ireland. We did Dublin, Cork and Belfast, which are just three huge shows. And then into Isle of Wight and doing Transmit Festival and all that. And now the last 2 weeks, I am just like, I can feel I'm run down and all that. And you just, I find it really difficult at the end of a tour to be a human being again after like 2 weeks. It takes me about 2 weeks to get back to normal. Back home, like being like, do I really have to fucking cook my own dinner here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I have to walk to the shop and I have to interact with people and I have to, that sounds very privileged the way I said that. It's not what I mean. I just mean like,
just back to everyday stuff again.
It's a switch.
Yeah, like that. It's gone. Yeah. You're going from, especially like when you do like a 2 month long tour and you're playing to thousands of people every night and you're on a bus and you're in one city and then you're in the next city and you're doing interviews and you're doing all this shit that you want to be doing, all this class stuff like, and then you're just left on. I'll never forget when we played the RDS in 2018. That was our biggest show today at that time. And it was 35,000 people and we got a police escort from the stage like so we could get out ahead of all the footfall and all the traffic. So remember the last note of the song and all the boys were still on stage and I took off the guitar and I ran off straight into a van and all the boys got into the van, went straight back to the hotel. And I remember standing in the hotel room being like, literally 4 minutes, I'd say, 4 or 5 minutes ago, I was on stage in front of 35,000 people and I'm standing in a hotel room by myself. I remember just being like, this is not right. This is not natural. You're not supposed to experience something like that, you know what I mean? So we literally, we started a tradition then in the band where after our big runs, we now go on holiday as a band. After a big run, the four of us will just go on holiday for a week just to all be together and kind of come down together and be able to kind of support each other through it, which is like a tradition now that we've done every year and it's the best thing we've done, I think.
You mentioned therapy earlier. Is that a part of the reason why that you wanted to go to therapy doing things like
that? Yeah, big time. I think it was, yeah, because do you know what it was? Is like when you stand on stage in front of that many people and experience that much love, the word I always use is unnatural. You know what I mean? You're not, I don't know if the human brain is made to experience 35,000 people or however many thousand people giving you all the love. And like, it's what everyone would love. But when you get it, it's like, this is crazy. And I don't even know if I love myself. You know what I mean? I've had moments like that. I do now because of therapy and all of that. But that kind of made me realize was like, I don't know if I actually love myself and have a healthy relationship with myself the way that these people are giving me love. Like I should be giving myself that love first and foremost. And I need to learn how to do that. And it was that, you're spot on with that. Like it was standing on stage and feeling that and being like, right, there's something amiss here. Like, I guess that maybe is a bit of imposter syndrome in terms of like, it's like, why are they giving me that much love and giving us that much love if I can't give it to myself? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Such a conscious thing to be aware of. And like, you know, there's emotions going on here and you know, there's feelings involved and you're trying to process it rather than let it consume you.
Yeah.
So it is such a conscious thing, so good for the head that, and even making decisions like going on holiday together.
Yeah.
So you're so supportive of the people that's bringing you through this journey as well. That's really is, you're in tune with that. So you're onto something right there anyway. Right?
Yeah. It's a big help. And the boys like Owen's with me here today, we're so close. And that's the thing I'm most proud of. If you ask me what you're most proud of in your career, it's the closeness of our band.
Yeah.
It just is, like, because again, I didn't realise that not all bands are like that. I thought all bands are like super close and best friends and all that. But then when I started to meet other people, there's like all these weird power dynamics within bands. And what we have is really, really special and unique. We were just, went to Inishere there on the Aran Islands a couple of weeks ago, the four of us, and just had like the best crack ever for a few days after those Irish shows. And I really feel for solo artists, like, who walk out on stage by themselves. I always feel like the boys are behind me. I'm walking out here with my chest out and I feel confident, but a big part of that's because I'm with the boys. You know what I mean? I couldn't do it myself. Mm. No way. So I feel very, very lucky that I have such a tight bond with the boys. Like,
just even on shows, we're on obviously a much smaller scale. Like, we walk out to like 2,000, 2,500 people.
Yeah.
So we know what you're experiencing. Then when it's like that night or the next day and you're just on your own, you're like, what?
It's weird, isn't it?
Like, everyone was cheering last night, running them up, and then I'm just walking around.
Yeah. It's like, so weird.
It's the maddest feeling in the world.
Yeah.
This is something that I say to Calvin all the time. I've never even went out after a live show. So like, right, we do a live show, we usually go out somewhere to a gig and like that. I'm a no-go for that.
Really? Yeah.
Like, I think it does help with the decompression.
I'd say so, yeah.
Because one time I went straight from the show back to the house to drop something home.
Yeah.
And I remember the house feeling real empty. And I was like, oh, this, I'm going back into everybody.
Right.
And going back in anyways, but I'm like, I'm out of here. Okay?
Yeah.
Whereas when you go out after, like, it is a big hectic, but it gradually comes down.
Yeah.
And then, like, you go back to someone's house after and you're with all your mates and you're having a bit of laugh. And then it slowly just goes out then.
Yeah.
And then you can wake up the next day and go on with it.
Yeah.
Which I think it does help with the decompression.
Because it's huge. Like, your head is going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
For hours after the show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, my head does being anyways. I'd be like, what the f-?
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to socialize like with family and friends, like, and I'm like, I can't even take him. I just need 100%. To be on my own here,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like with someone, like,
yeah,
one or two people, yeah, and like, yeah, in a quiet environment,
yeah.
The thoughts of like a nightclub or a pub or socializing is fucking horrific.
Yeah, no, I'm the very same as you when it comes to that. I'm exactly the same because I'd be no good to anybody in a pub or a nightclub anyway, because I'm like you're saying, 100 million thoughts going through your head. I find it really hard to sleep after a show.
Yeah.
Like, I find it impossible. And we're not big, like, if we're on a tour, I've never once touched a drop of alcohol or any of us before going on stage ever. Not even one time. And the night before a show, I won't drink or do anything like that. So I love that when you're on tour because it gives me an excuse as well.
Yeah.
Like, no, I have a show tomorrow. So I'm not.
Yeah.
And they can kind of, you know what I mean?
Very professional as well, though.
Yeah, we've always.
The very thing I was thinking that.
Yeah.
That's very fucking professional.
Like. Yeah.
It shows that you value, though, like, you're doing 5 nights somewhere.
Yeah.
You value night one just as much as you value night four.
100%.
So if you take off any of them, you're getting the best Ryan Hennessy.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, the best picture is, sorry.
Best picture is.
The rest of the band don't drink either.
Yeah, we all do it together. Yeah. And we've done that from day one, just treated it very professionally because exactly what you're saying, I wouldn't be able to put on the best show I possibly could if I had a few pints or whatever. I just wouldn't. None of us would. I want from every show, which is an impossible task, but I want every show, every single person in the audience to walk away and say, that's the best show I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I try my best to do that every single night. And if I was drinking or messing around or not preparing properly, like, there's a lot of preparation. I have to do a lot of, I warm up my voice and I go through like a kind of mantra in my head before going on stage in that kind of 5 minutes where I talk myself up. If you see me backstage and bounce around like I'm about to go into the cage to fight somebody, like I'm bouncing around shadowboxing, telling myself I'm the best in the world and all this, like, but I need to do it, you know what I mean? It's all preparation. And it reminds me of growing up playing football. It was always preparation. I always compared it to growing up playing football. I knew in the dressing room when I had the boots on, I had the kit on, right, I'm ready to go play the match now. And that's exactly how I feel before going on stage. When I put on whatever I'm wearing, I'm like, right, now it's time to lock in, going out to do the best I can do here.
Mm. You're big into football still, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely love it. I miss it so much. I get to go back and watch the boys. I miss it. Standing on the sideline, not being involved, like, I miss every aspect of it. I really do. I play, like, and Clamullion, the boys are unbelievable. The last 5-6 years, they've won everything, absolutely everything in Kildare and Leinster. So I'm so proud. And my dad runs the club, and I designed the kit for them last season, which was unbelievable. That was like a dream come true for me, because when I was growing up, we were fucking useless. Like, when I was playing, so typical. We had the worst kit ever, chafing the nipples off you. So I was like, I want to get a good kit for the boys. So I designed it with Paul Galvin, one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And we designed it together, and it was just like, it was amazing. to sit and to get to see them playing in the kit and all that, it's just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So yeah, football, I think will always be my, if you ask me now, would I trade it all to play for Man United, I'd probably say yeah.
Yeah.
Not United right now, but yeah. I'd probably say yeah. I can't lie, yeah.
Pleasure.
Paul Galvin, best mate, you're well connected with everyone in Ireland, aren't you?
Yeah, Paul, again, Paul was one of my heroes growing up, and yeah. I reached out to him when the band started and was like, I love clothes and being into style and fashion and whatever, and he was very gracious and replied to me, and we've been best friends ever since. Paul's a big United fan as well.
Yeah, and you have good friends with Robbie Keane as well.
Yeah, Robbie's great. He was great actually to us early on, gave us a lot of support, and like, was just, he'd always throw the arm around you to be like, are you all right? And yeah, who do you have around you and all that. And I love being friends with the footballers, because you, and they love being friends with us.
That's supposed to be a thing, isn't it?
Big thing.
It's supposed to be big in America as well, that sports stars want to be the musicians and yeah, the musicians want to be the sports stars.
Yeah.
That's why you always see them mingling. Totally.
Yeah, you get it, we get it all the time. James Madison, I'm great friends with James, and he is music obsessed.
Mm.
Like, I've never seen, and he's more obsessed with music than anybody I've ever met. And he's always on to me, like texting me about songs and all this kind of thing. And it's cool, like, because he gets to live through me and I get to live through him. And it's the same with any of the footballers you meet. But yeah, I think we both just want to be each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we'd both trade it. Like, if I said to James, you could be in picture this and I'll go and play for Spurs, the two of us would take that.
Bad deal for you, though, wouldn't it?
It is a bad deal for me. Yeah. 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 Spurs, maybe not. Yeah.
Come here, I run out of space to write on you. And, anyways, what's it?
I know.
The tattoos. What's your inspiration behind some of them?
We actually counted them recently, and it was, I had 99 when we counted them, so I have about 110 now, which is mental, because I thought, well, before we counted, I was like, oh, I probably have 50, because I have all my body covered and my legs now as well. Do you know what it is? It was growing up just copying off my older brother. He had, I get a lot of kind of, I got into style through him as well, and he started getting tattoos, so I was like, oh, that's cool, I'll get some tattoos, and that's kind of how I started. But it's just another way of expressing myself, really.
Yeah.
I think it all is like, whatever, I change my hair all the time and get tattoos and clothes, it's all just expression, really. That's what I found in my life, is just a series of me trying to find new ways to express myself.
Yeah.
And tattoos is that for me, because a lot of them don't have any meaning, like.
Yeah.
And I've no problem saying that. I know a lot of people are like, oh, they all have meaning. I'm like, I've got a fucking,
did I say a hanger there a minute ago? Is there a hanger?
Yeah, I do have a hanger somewhere. There, look. Yeah.
Somewhere.
I don't know where half your tattoos are, you know what I mean? That's my Wi-Fi code.
Is it actually?
Yeah. there, which is meant, that's just stupid, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
Yeah, it's handy. What's your Wi-Fi code?
It is handy, yeah.
Instead of
getting
down behind, get it off. Behind
it. Yeah. Jaws is in the worst spot in the gaff.
I have a picture on my phone.
Yeah.
Just take it out, you know.
That's a good shout, actually.
Yeah. A friend of mine is like you, he's covered in tattoos. I mean, both his arms are covered, his back.
All right, yeah.
I think he's all over as well, but he has I Love FIFA tattooed on his arse.
Does he?
Yeah.
Did he lose a bet or something?
No, he actually willingly got it, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like you lost.
One of the other lads, has his name in Chinese or something, so it's like three symbols.
All right.
And he got fed up telling people what it meant. So because it's three symbols, he used to say I Love FIFA.
Oh, right.
And the two of them were locked together and they got a tattoo like I Heart FIFA on their arse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Is it, yeah? What have you got, Terry?
Well, I have the hip knocker on my hip.
Do you have the hip knocker?
Yeah. I'm talking bollocks on my leg.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not getting talking bollocks after this show. So.
Yours is all Brandon, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
good PR, like
on the ball.
Yeah.
He's going to have the copyright symbol behind his ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ryan, what's the proudest moment of your career? Or picture this career?
I think it was actually releasing our first album. And I think I used to always say like Five Nights, which obviously is incredible and very proud that we've done that. But releasing the first album, because we went and recorded our first album in Nashville, like, and lived there for 2-3 weeks and recorded the whole album there with Shakira King, who produced Kings of Leon, all their big albums. And it was just like, I never knew, like I'm saying, that you could even make an album. And then all of a sudden you're in one of the best studios in the US in Nashville, but on the biggest producers. And we're all living there like in the same Airbnb. It was just unbelievable when I think back. Just such an amazing experience and such great memories from that. So that's like a real, hold that very close to my heart. I'd say that and the Five Nights in the Tree Arena, because I think that was when people really started taking us seriously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because there was a lot of people, because we were kind of one of the first acts to come through social media.
Mm.
It was Facebook, like, which makes it sound old now because everyone's on TikTok or whatever. But a lot of the kind of old stock were like, oh, they're a social media band or they're a boy band or whatever. But then when they were like, we were selling out Five Nights in the Tree Arena, that was, everybody kind of took notice. So I'd say those 2 moments, making the album. And sorry, one other was in the first year of the band, we put on a free show in a tie because of what I was saying earlier. They gave us so much love that we wanted to we were going on our first ever tour around Ireland, and we said we want to start it in Athy, but there's no venues in Athy. Like, so we set up a stage in the GAA car park, and there was 10,000 people living in Athy at the time, and it was a 5,000 cap venue, so literally half the town was there. We'd get all tickets for free, you just had to show up, and the day before, get your ticket, go in. But I'll never forget the atmosphere there. It was just, and I get goosebumps talking about one part where my dad said he was leaving, they're all walking home through the town, my family, and he said everybody on the streets were just singing Picture This songs. And he said a taxi pulled up beside him and said, do you want the lift? And dad was like, oh, no, we're grand. Like, he said, oh, no, hop in, I'll give you a lift. And then he went to pay him, and he said, no, none of the taxis in the town are taking money tonight. Getting emotional there, he's fucking talking about, because the boys put on a free show, so we're running everything free tonight. Nobody asked them to do that, you know what I mean? Just they seen what we were doing for the town, and they wanted to do that as well. But the town didn't realise that they had done everything for us. We were only paying them back, you know what I mean? And that's really my proudest moment.
That's at the Amigos moment.
Yeah, same.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Great sense of community from one of the worst towns in Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, exactly.
You know, there you go. 100%. One of the worst towns in Ireland, and yeah, shit like that's going on.
Yeah. Exactly.
Crazy, like.
Yeah, the most loyal people, the most salted air people I've ever met, ever known in my life, are from there, and from the estate, and from that town. And that's it there, you know what I mean? That's a prime example. Nobody asked them to do that. Mm. They went and did that. Unbelievable, I'll never forget that.
That's amazing, that. I think it's probably a good way to end.
Yeah, before it gets deeper.
Yeah, I'm sobbing.
Will.
Yeah. I'm sobbing. Have you had the plug, Ryan?
Have you had the plug? No, I don't. The album's out. Parked Car Conversations came out in April. We did done our Irish shows for the year. We might do something later in the year. Haven't announced that yet. A little bit. I'll give you that much of an exclusive. Yeah. I won't say where or when or anything, but no, yeah, we'll be back around later in the year at some stage or next
you
year.
Put out a single.
A single, yeah. 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 We released a song called Satellites, yeah.
Which is mad, because what's the Scripps new album called?
Satellites.
Yeah, there you go. It is, yeah. And me and Danny are going to have to fight over that. Although I wouldn't fucking fight him.
Yeah.
But it's mad because like two of the biggest bands in Ireland had a Script and Pitch at This.
Yeah.
And we had two of the Bleeding Front Men on in the space of 2 weeks. And we never had Front Men on, Terry. They're like Bleeding Buses. You wait around long enough and two come along together.
Christy Dignam.
There you go, yeah. That was, what, 2 years ago?
2 years ago, I think that was, yeah.
Ring Bono and see where he's down now on the 4th of August.
We'd want to be stuck. That's the end of that. Ryan, thanks very much for coming in, mate.
Thanks,
really appreciate it, honestly.
Yeah, legend.
You're a legend, bro. And thanks for supporting us as well since day one.
Absolutely.
And before we wrap up, and thanks again to Floyfe, as you said at the top, 20 locations all around the country. And for €35 a month, you can become a member today at floyfit.ie. All right, we all done here. Take us out, Siobhan.
Boom!
Go Loud presents Talking Bollocks, proudly supported by FlyFit. Smash your fitness goals guided by expert trainers at FlyFit. Visit flyfit.ie to sign up now. Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up.
The Hypnocker.